Here is my Ebenezer. Anybody know what that means? Just give a shout out. No, it's not a musical instrument. Not a musical instrument. There you go. It is a monument. What does it mean, though? Okay, it is a place where he met God, but what it really comes back to is this. Ebenezer means simply this. Up to this point, God has helped. Okay, and that was the monument, that was the rock that was put there. And so God met with us. And so when we look at our lives and who we are and what we are about, it literally means up to this point, God has helped us. What it literally means is this. So far, so God. So far, so God. In other words, up to this point, God has helped. And so this morning, of all the messages that I've done over the last year and a half, this week has been the biggest struggle. In the writing world, they would call it writer's block. I guess in the pastoral world, you call it pastor's block. I don't know what you'd call it. I just know I got stuck, you know? And you know when you get desperate is when you look at your nine-month-old and go, Josiah, what would you say? And he goes, da, 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 da. And I was like, well, there's no better person than da, 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 right? Of course, he says everything is da, da. And Sherry points it out, and she goes, he's not saying you. He just says da, da, da. I was like, no, look, every good thing that he points to, he calls it da, da. It makes sense. And she's just... No, he is not saying your name. But, you know, even with him, I was like, well, at least you've got more to share than what I do at this point. And sometimes you struggle, you know, and maybe you've found it in your own relationship with God that you just get dry. You're just searching for God to do something in your life, and it's just not there. You know he's there, but it's just like it's not happening for you. It's happening for other people. You know, they'll write you and say, oh, let me share with you what God did, or let me tell you what God's doing in my life, and you're trying to rejoice, but at the same time, you're going, well, how come it is that I can't hear anything? And so sometimes we go through those struggles, and even as of yesterday morning, I mean, I knew I was really getting desperate because that's when I looked at Sherry and said, Sherry, what would you say? You know, I mean, nothing against Sherry, but normally she's just like, whatever, I don't know, you know. How did you make it behind the baby? Does anyone have a spare bedroom that I could say? I'm just teasing. But, you know, I for her, she's always just like, I don't know, I don't know. And so it was a real struggle for me this week. And I don't know how many times I started a message and threw it away and, you know, and say, no, that's not what is really on God's heart for me, and I don't think is what's on God's heart for us. And so I just kind of sat back, and I was just like, okay, God, I can't get any particular topic, theme, anything. So you start. You know, help me with, you know, this thing, because Sunday does come every week, and people don't want to say, hey, look, I don't have anything for you this week. See you later. You know, that's a little awkward and a little weird. And I really felt like God was telling me to look back and to look back through the journey. And so that's what I did. I just kind of set aside, because I think we get so much into the daily grind that we forget to kind of look back. And I know sometimes we look at Scripture and we go, yeah, but didn't Jesus say something about not looking back? And it is true. He said, don't look back. But there was a reason why he even talked about no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back as fit for the kingdom. And so then we go, well, then I shouldn't look back. And that's not what he meant. What he meant was is this. When you set your hand to the plow, when you get on board with what God is doing and what Christ is doing, that as you move forward, the person that decides one day, you know, I really don't want to do this. I want to be elsewhere. I really don't want to be a part of God's kingdom. That's what Jesus was talking about, and I've heard people talk about before, you know, just, you know, put your nose to the grind and just go for it. But you know, it's really interesting how many times in the Bible that God told us to remember. Just look through the Old Testament. You're going to have a hard time finding one book that didn't have the word remember in it. As a matter of fact, Jesus even set up some remembrances. One of the key ones that we practice is communion or the Lord's Supper. What was that all about? What did Jesus say? Do this what? In remembrance of me. God set up these remembrances. In other words, that monument, Ebenezer, was a reminder constantly, not just to that individual, but for the nation. This is what God has done. Up to this point, God has helped. Up to this point, God has always been with us, and it's a reminder, it's a remembrance to say, this is what God has done. So I'm going to take you a little bit back in my journey. Some of you know the specifics of some of these stories. Some of them might be new to you. But what my prayer has been, and what I really feel like God was impressing upon my heart yesterday as I struggled all week long to figure out, you know, God, Sunday does come. And, you know, I had to remember God always comes through. You know, God always comes through. And I'm praying and hoping that as we move through this story, and it's certainly a story of my journey, that there'll be some tidbits and there'll be some pieces that God impresses upon your heart to say, oh, that's how God worked in his life. And now that I can see maybe how God's been working in my life. Some of them you will just go, I'm not sure the correlation of that to my life and where I'm at this point, but maybe one day. And maybe 2 years from now, you're going to remember back. And so let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 8. It's on page 164 there in your Bibles that is out there in front of you if you want to look there, page 164. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8. It was interesting this last week as the staff and I got together on, I believe it was on Friday, and we were sitting at Starbucks, and you know, I was asking them, guys, you know, what is God teaching you? What are you reading? And that sort of thing. And so we were talking about some of the books that we've been reading, and one of the guys says, well, you know, I'm reading this book, and nothing revolutionary, but it is a good reminder. And I thought, okay, there's that phrase again, you know? And I looked at him and said, you know, if I could just remember what God has taught me when I was 7 years old in Sunday school with flannel graph, okay? You know flannel graph, all right? If I could just remember what I knew at the age of seven, my Christian life would be incredible. But the problem is we as humans usually do what? We forget. And I don't know about you, but my biggest disappointments in my Christian walk is stuff that I learned and forgot or didn't practice. And then I would get so mad and go, I cannot believe that. How many times have I learned that only to fail again? And if we could just remember a small portion of what we've been taught, how much better off we would be in our journey. Listen to this in light of that in Deuteronomy chapter 8. Be careful to remember, be careful to obey all the commands I'm giving you today. Then you will live and multiply, and you will enter and occupy the land the Lord swore to give your ancestors. Remember how the Lord your God led you through the wilderness for these 40 years, humbling you and testing you to prove your character and to find out whether or not you would obey his commands. Yes, he humbled you by letting you go hungry and then feeding you with manna, a food previously unknown to you and your ancestors. He did it to teach you that people do not live by bread alone. Rather, we live by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. For all these 40 years, your clothes didn't wear out and your feet didn't blister or swell. Think about it. Just as a parent disciplines a child, the Lord your God disciplines you for your own good. So obey the commands of the Lord your God by walking in his ways and fearing him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land of flowing streams and pools of water, with fountains and springs that gush out in the valleys and hills. It is a land of wheat and barley, of grapevines, fig trees, and pomegranates, of olive oil and honey. It is a land where food is plentiful and nothing is lacking. It is a land where iron is as common as stone and copper is abundant in the hills. When you have eaten your fill, be sure to praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. But that is the time to be careful. Beware that in the plenty that you do not forget the Lord your God and disobey his commands, regulations, and decrees that I'm giving you today. For when you've become full and prosperous and have built fine homes to live in, and when your flocks and herds have become very large and your silver and gold have multiplied along with everything else, be careful. Do not become proud at that time. Forget the Lord your God who rescued you from slavery in the land of Egypt. Do not forget that he led you through the great and terrifying wilderness with its poisonous snakes and scorpions, where it was so hot and dry. He gave you water from the rock. He fed you with manna in the wilderness, a food unknown to your ancestors. He did this to humble you and test you for your own good. He did all this so that you would never say to yourself, I have achieved this wealth with my own strength and energy. Remember the Lord your God. He is the one who gives you power to be successful in order to fulfill the covenant he confirmed to your ancestors with an oath. But I assure you of this, if you ever forget the Lord your God and follow other gods, worshiping and bowing down to them, you will certainly be destroyed. Just as the Lord has destroyed other nations in your path, you also will be destroyed if you refuse to obey the Lord your God. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes this morning. Let's just really focus in for the next few minutes, okay? Let's bow our heads and close our eyes. And I don't know your background. I don't know where you've come from. Maybe this is the first time that you've given church or God a chance in a long time. This may be, in your mind, the last chance. And I want you to know that that I treasure that, and I can appreciate that. And so maybe this morning, there's some skepticism in your life about God and who he is, and you're just wondering, you know, is he real? Does he really care? Even if he is real, does he care about me? Does he care about the world? And maybe this morning, you just need to pray that prayer to God, just to say, you know, if you're real, would you please reveal yourself to me in a way that only I will understand? And for some of you this morning, there's a longing to get closer to Christ. You don't have the skepticism that God is real. You're past that, but it's just like God sometimes seems like he's trying to hide. And maybe your prayer is this morning, God, I'm seeking you with my whole heart this morning. Would you please reveal yourself to me in a personal way, in a way that only I would understand? And for others of you, this may have been the best spiritual week you've ever had. And I celebrate that with you, and God does too. But maybe you should pray the prayer of, God, don't let me forget what you've done. Don't let me forget. Help me to remember. Just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Several years ago, before I met Sherry, I will be quite honest and open, and I've talked about this before, I really struggled with the whole single issue. You know, when you're 25, it's like, hey, you know, whatever, you know. You get 28 and people remind you that 30's not that far off and maybe you should get a little more serious, you know. People give me advice like, be very choosy, be very picky. And then when I turned 30, those same people are like, you know what your problem is? You're too picky, you're too choosy, you know. You've been there before, you know this, okay? You know this, it's amazing, you know. Your relatives, be picky, don't just settle. And by 30, they're like, can't you find anybody? I mean, on the whole globe, the entire planet, you know. Was there 300 million people that live in the United States? Okay, something around that. And maybe, I don't know, 50 million or so might be single. You know, you couldn't find one, you know. And you're like, whoa. I hated family reunions. I don't know about you, but I hated family reunions when I was single because it'd be like, well, is there anyone special in your life? You're like, lots of special people. I love people. Which kind of special people? No, of the female variety that might like you back, who's also single and cute, you know. You're like, oh, those kinds of special people. No, I haven't given myself to that. I'm really trying to give myself to God, which was a great spiritual answer and usually cut it off, all right? But they usually got around that, and they're well-intentioned people, but annoying, you know. And so you knew that these things were going to come up. Your friends would ask you, you'd go to weddings, and I don't know about you, but you learned how to kind of, when you turn 30, to evade the receptions because that's when they push you out on the floor, you know, chanting your name. And you're like, in other applications, my name being chanted would be outrageously significant. This is outrageously humiliating, you know, chanting. And I know Sherry went through the same thing, and that was, you know, she would get out there in 30-something and everybody be chanting her name to catch the bouquet. And while it sounds a little fun, it's really not, is it? I mean, it's really not. It's kind of humiliating. Now, 25, it's like, woo, let me catch it, you know. You get on up there and it's like, maybe not. You know, I'm going to pounce on these flowers and spike it, you know, and show you, you know, I didn't want to catch these stupid things. And for the guy, you know, it's always like, how can I hide? And so I will tell you, that was a huge struggle. And I know that some of you have struggled with that very same thing. And one of my friends came to me and challenged me to go on a singles cruise. And I said, that's not happening. And said, God was calling me to it. And I said, no, he's not. And, you know, and so he said, why not? And I was like, that's just weird for me, man. It's fine for somebody else to go. It's just weird for me. It's just my own personal thing. In the very next sentence, he said, God's calling you to get online on one of these Christian dating things. And I was like, I thought God called me to go on a singles cruise. And he said it was optional. And I'm like, what? You having these conversations with God and I can't see or hear it? I mean, it's split-second stuff. It takes me a year to come up with that. And so then I did. I didn't tell anybody and stumbled across eHarmony online. And I was like, oh, this is actually something that you have to fill out more than a paragraph about yourself, about how wonderful you are, right? Because it's like you're selling yourself, you know. I'm cool. I'm independent. I'm really not looking for a long-term relationship. You know, that's what you put on there. Or else you scare people off if you're like, I'm looking for the love of my life. People are like, whoa, what's wrong with them, right? Okay, but we all know that that's what they're really putting up there. And so stumbled on eHarmony, and it was maybe a week or so later that this little person popped up there, Sherry from Westlake, Ohio. And I was like, wow, where's Westlake, Ohio? And of course, she was thinking, where in the world is this place in Arkansas, you know, let alone Arkansas? And so on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, Sherry's luckiest day of her life, she won the eHarmony lottery that day, and out came me. And you're like, they have an eHarmony lottery? No. It's just the way I prop up my fragile self-esteem, okay? And so we met, and that was on a Wednesday, and you know, Saturday and Sunday I was checking, you know, to see if she had responded back, since your communication is the way that they put it on there. And so, you know, we began that dialogue, and I knew that this was the woman of my dreams when she said, I had to come into work on Sunday afternoon, because immediately this is what I thought, sugar mama. That's what I was thinking. This lady will take care of me. I'm kidding. Everybody's like, what? No, I was like, wow, she's a hard worker, you know, and everything else. And she was working on a huge account that had been totally messed up, and she was the one put on it to fix it. And I was like, well, maybe she can fix my life because I need help. And everyone else knew I needed help. So I was just like, okay, I'll just admit it. And so then we got to know each other, and by July 1st, we were engaged, and by October 23rd, we were married. And it's extremely fast, but we weren't 22, okay? So I hear people all the time saying, oh, I want to have a story just like yours. And I'm like, well, we weren't exactly spring chickens. We weren't exactly old, but we weren't exactly straight out of college, okay? We were a little bit past that, all right? And so God brought that around. And that was part of my journey. But I will tell you, during those single days, that was a huge struggle. I have friends that you can call today that will tell you, man, that was a huge, huge deal. It was hurtful. You know, I'll never forget this happened in church. And sometimes as Christians, we're just really stupid. Okay? I mean, we just say boneheaded things. And this guy walked up to me, and he was really trying to be funny, but it was one of those things that you just never forget. And he walked up to me at church while I was single. And it was Father's Day, and he just kind of nudged me like that, and he goes, Happy Father's Day. Now, I certainly was not a dad. It would not be good for a minister to have that child and not be married, okay? That was kind of the end of the road there. But, you know, I never forgot that because it stung. And while he was trying to be kind of joking, you can imagine the impact that fell. You know, sometimes it felt that sometimes we just say some pretty silly things. We forget what it's like. And that's why when single people come to me about a breakup or about a relationship or whatever else, man, I can get transported back in time and feel the sting. I understand it full well. I don't forget it. And you know, sometimes we just forget, don't we? We forget what it's like when we've been through something to share with someone else and to try to encourage them along. We need to remember. We need to remember. So I came up to Cleveland, was assistant pastor at a church out in North Olmsted, loved it there. We were having the time of our life there. 1 year into it, all of a sudden I felt empty, and I went to Sherry and I said, "Sherry, I don't know what the deal is." I said, "We love our pastor, we love our staff, we love our church, we have no issues, things are going well. We're living the American dream, man." But I felt empty. I was like, "What's that all about?" And she goes, "I don't know." She goes, "That's what you're feeling, I don't know." So we kept talking about it, and she finally looked at me and she said, "Does this mean that we might move?" And I said, "I don't know, could be." I said, "I'm just unfulfilled, but yet love where we are. What's that all about?" And sometimes God, and maybe this will help you at some point in time in your life, everything can be going well, but the way God moves us sometimes is he makes us uncomfortable. He makes us uncomfortable. Because if we're comfortable, we will always stay in that same arena and in that same environment. And God knows that as humanity, that's what we do. And so he has to sometimes push us out and get us out of our comfort zone to realize there may be something else for us. And so we began to pray through it. And my mom and dad are very committed Christians. And I'm thankful that I grew up in that home and that I told them about my struggle. Sherry's parents are very committed Christians. And I told them about my struggle. And so they were praying with us. And so my parents called me up and said, "Hey, we just prayed for one of the missionaries there in Cleveland. They would get a, for their birthdays, there's this list that goes around of all the North American missionaries. And they said, 'Hey, we just prayed for Randy. You know, you met him before you moved up there. Why don't you give him a call?'" And I don't know about you, but it's icky at around the age of 35, 36 that your parents are telling you something, okay? It's icky at 22, all right? And so I've established a rule in my life, and maybe this will help you. If your parents tell you to do something and you know it's the right thing to do, wait 1 month. After 1 month, it becomes your idea, okay? And so that's what I would encourage you and challenge you. Just give it 30 days, and then you can say, "Hey, I've come to a decision." And they'll be like, "I thought I told you that." And you say, "I don't remember that at all." And that's fine. And, you know, because they're old, and they'll probably go, "I thought we did. Didn't you say?" And, and you'll get them all thinking that, you know, it's all, they're losing it. And so I called up Randy, and I said, "Hey, you know, Randy, I didn't call him with a very happy attitude." And he goes, "Well, where are you at in ministry?" And I said, "We don't know." And he goes, "Hey, we're helping to plant churches around Cleveland. What do you think about church planting?" And I said, "I don't." And he goes, "What?" I said, "Look, I know it's the way we need to go. But the bottom line is I've read like one or two books on it. And that is about as novice as what you get is to read a book. Reading a book does nothing. Just maybe gives you some awareness, but that gives you nothing." He goes, "Well, meet some people, you know, here, you know, meet this guy and maybe he'll help you." And so I began that relationship with those people and listened to them. And I thought they were absolutely crazy, still do to this day. Wonderful people, but they were talking about creating something out of nothing. And I'm like, whoa, you know, I can understand a business doing that, but you're in an environment that not a lot of people are saying, "Hey, don't we need some more new churches around here? You know, I'd join a new church." And so then we began to pray about that. And I was like, "Okay, you know," and I said, "Sherry, I don't know what the deal is, but I really do feel like this is the direction we need to go." Now, this took us months to get to that point, okay? I'm giving it to you in a short time frame. Months to get to that point. But I had to look back during those times because I had to look back to say, okay, how has God done some things with me in the past? It doesn't always mean he'll do the same things in the future because God is not in a box. But I will say this to you. God will work with you uniquely the way he does with you like nobody else. You can't rest upon what somebody else has done. This is good to learn those things, but God will work with you uniquely the way he does with nobody else. And so I began to look back and saying, okay, you know, I remember this heart tug before. I remember God moving me before this way. So he's moving me to something. I just don't know what it is. And so God began to do a work in our lives. And finally they came to me and said, hey, you know, you've got some friends in some major metropolitan areas that are doing some work downtown and, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, would you be interested? I said, look, those are my friends. We talk about everything, but I don't talk to them about, hey, how do you plant a church in a downtown environment? Like that, we're just friends. Yeah, that, and they were like, well, you know, I think there may be a reason why that's so. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm the village idiot from Arkansas. You know, why would you want me? I'm really not, but close. You know, why would you think that this is the right mode for me? Because of all the people that would be chosen, that would not be me. Because it doesn't fit. And this is what I've learned from God. Usually the person that's least likely is the one that God wants. That's usually the way it goes. So if you think in your mind and in your heart, I don't know. I don't know how God could use me. I don't know how. You're probably the one that God really, really wants to use. Because the person who's incredible at something will have a tendency to do what? Take credit for themselves, or other people will give them credit. It says so right here in the scripture passage that we just read. What did God say to him? Hey, if you're not careful when everything is going well, you're going to say that you did it, or other people will say that you did it. You need to understand God is the one that's doing this for you. Don't forget it. And you know, we all get like that sometimes, don't we? Well, the unique thing that happened was is we were starting from nothing. We knew no one downtown and in those environments. And we got this email from this couple that had heard about us, and they were on the east side and had a heart for downtown. They had given a prayer request through one of their small groups to their leader, and that leader looked at them and said, hey, I'm part of an organization that's helping to plant churches, and we've got a planter going downtown. Would you like to talk with them? They said, yes. So I look back in my calendar, and on August the 13th at 8 p.m. was the greatest day in Jason and Carrie Brumbaugh's life. You say, that's when they got married. No, that's when they met me. No, I'm kidding. That was the worst day of their life. They just didn't realize it at the time. They thought this was going to be great. And I'm like, whoa, what did we get into? And we met at Baker Square at 8 p.m. that evening, that Sunday evening. And so it was the four of us trying to figure out a way, what is God doing? And will this even work? And I will tell you, there was a lot of sleepless nights on my end, a lot. And I mean a lot, because I kept on going, God, why are we doing this? This is crazy. This is stupid. This is just insane. Because I would even get from Christian believers around Cleveland that would say to me, I don't see how that would ever work. I'm going to pray for you. I just don't see how that will work. Do you realize how tough it will be downtown? Do you realize that those people are probably not interested in church? Do you realize that? And man, I started really doubting, whoa, what have I gotten myself into? But here's what I knew. I felt like God had called me. So regardless of whether it worked or didn't work, I couldn't deny the call. And I will tell you, in your journey, there's going to be some things you're up against that you're going to say, I just don't see how this would work. Whether or it works or whether it doesn't work is irrelevant to God, because he's working on your character. And he's working on my character, because God is more concerned about my character than he is about my success. God is more concerned about your character than he is worried about your success, because success sometimes goes to our head. That's why he gave the warning. He said, don't forget. Don't forget if I do all these things for you. Don't forget. And so that began the journey. So September 1st, 2006 was our, quote, first day on the job. And I got up that morning, and Sherry looked at me and she said, so what are you going to do today? And I said, I have absolutely no idea, because I didn't. Where do you start? What do you do? And I remember coming downtown and walking around Tower City, all these people around lunchtime, you know, buzzing past me. And I remember muttering underneath my breath, what am I doing here? This is crazy. I shouldn't have done this. I have put my family in the middle of something that is just outrageously ridiculous. And then what happened was, on October the 2nd, we had a meeting with Downtown Cleveland Alliance. They were newly formed at that point in time, and Jason went with us, and I had several other guys that went with us that were part of our financial accountability board, that were business leaders that would help us to watch our finances so that we were above board and we did what we said we were going to do. And we sat in that room, and Jason will tell you, at the end of it, Jason and I huddled up, and I said, what did you think about the meeting? He said, what did you think about the meeting? I said, no, what did you think about the meeting? He goes, they have absolutely no idea what to do with us. And they didn't, because we didn't come in with a bunch of things saying, hey, we want to do this, 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 and this. We came in, and we looked at them, and we said, look, we're new. We're going to grow somehow, some way. We want to be of service to the city. What would you like for us to do? And it went absolutely quiet. And one of them said, we've never had anybody come to us and say that before. What usually happened, and months later on, as I got closer and closer to the people that worked there, they said, usually what happened was this. People would say that to us, but then when they came in the meeting, they would say, well, we've always wanted to do, and they would name off three or four things. They said, we thought that's what you were going to do. That's why it went very, very quiet. And it did. And I remember Jason and I standing there afterwards going, I don't see how this will ever amount to anything. And you know something? Of all of our partners, that's like one of our best partnerships right now. I mean, we do a ton of things with them. You're going to hear about in the next week or two this thing called Generosity Cleveland. That's not the way it's normally spelled with generosity, G-E-N-E-R-O-C-I-T-Y. Okay, Generosity Cleveland, you'll hear about it in the next week or 2 weeks. There's going to be parking meters, old parking meters set up on a lot of sidewalks downtown that you can place change into that will go straight to helping homeless. And we've worked with them on that. There's several other churches that are working with them on that. Now, we've had that like planned for a year, but it's taken the city for forever to give us parking meters that are outdated and old, okay? I mean, forever. I had finally told them, look, we'll buy the parking meters. What does it cost? You know, how much do old parking meters actually cost around here? And so you're going to hear about that on the news in the next couple of weeks, and that's become one of our best partnerships. And as you can see, now then God has used that as part of the journey with Gateway. That's the reason why we've been able to plant flowers and trees on West 9th and help clean up after the St. Patrick's Day parade, where we've cleaned up thousands of tons of trash because we know how to trash the place after St. Patrick's Day, don't we, around Cleveland. I mean, they know how to trash the place. But you know, that's become an incredible partnership now. In November, met a guy by the name of Scott Phillips. And it was so funny. I looked back at the emails yesterday in November that he and I bounced back and forth, and I'd gotten hold of him through a website, and it's called Cleveland City Living and all this other stuff, and going back and forth. And I knew that he knew someone at Downtown Cleveland Alliance. So we're back and forth, back and forth. And we say, and I say to him, hey, you know, I'd like to meet with you sometime. He said, oh, that'd be great. I live downtown. I was like, I do too. And I said, I live in Bridgeview Apartments. And he said, I do too. And I said, oh, well, that's kind of cool. But there's like, you know, 700 units, it seems like, in Bridgeview. And I said, you know, or he said, you know, I live on the 7th floor. And I was like, oh, that's uncanny. So do I. And I said, I'm in 731. And he goes, well, I'm in 721. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm just going to go outside and yell your name and just come out, you know, of your apartment. And Scott and I became friends at that point, and we began to do things together, and come to find out his parents and his family owns Guarino's restaurant over in Little Italy. And we began, I eat over there as often as I can when groups come in town and that sort of thing. And Scott does a lot of things with real estate. And now then Scott's heard about our vision for Nexus and what we're trying to do with the cafe and coffee house. And Scott knows some of those developers. And so guess what Scott's doing now? He's putting little bugs in the ears saying, hey, I like these people. This is good stuff. And do you see how God put that relationship together? And how God is using Scott, and Scott wants to see for the city great things to happen. He's a huge believer in Gateway. He'll tell you that. You know, at the time I was going, what are we doing? What does Scott have to do with what we're doing? And God, see, now then you begin to look back and you go, oh, this is part of what God was doing. January 2nd is when I met a lady named Rachel Holman of 2007. And she works for Westside Ecumenical Ministry, and she had heard me give a message at a church, and she said, "Hey, I don't know if there's any way to hook up, but you know, this is what we do." And well, we had a real heart for leveraging young professionals and business leaders to help out in the inner city, and man, it's been a great relationship. And Rachel is a very committed believer and is following Christ on a daily basis there. And man, we've probably served over 1,000 inner city kids and their families doing stuff. We've done everything from buying them clothes for school to free carnivals. I mean, you name it. There's just a little bit of everything. Painting some of the insides of homes for their little kids and their families. You know, most of them earning between $13,000 to $18,000 a year. It's just been a great connection, and God used that to do some pretty amazing things. So I'm looking forward to seeing what God's going to do in the future. On January the 16th, we had been praying for months about another place to meet and as far as launching the public services, and couldn't find a place, and man, just really struggling. And on January 16th, I was able to meet with this gentleman by the name of Nick Costas that owns Pickwick and Frolic. We sat right upstairs here in a booth, and I took Sherry with me because I knew that, you know, if he sees me, he's going to say no, but maybe Sherry might be able to, you know, kind of soften that edge a little bit. And so I bring in Sherry with me, and we sat down there with him and with his catering manager, Megan, who is still here, and sat down with the two of them, and Nick was trying to get his mind around, you want to do a church inside of here, and what's this all about? Who are you affiliated with? And, you know, we had to go down that road. And he was like, well, I need some letters of endorsement. So I was able to get some of those together. And so as we were talking, he said, so why did you choose here? I said, well, I heard you've got a great place. And he said, have you never been here? I was like, no. He goes, really? You've never seen my place? You need to talk with Nick. If he's here afterwards, just go talk to Nick. You'll love him. And Nick says, you've never seen my place? And I was like, I've never seen your place. I'm sorry, you know. I don't get out much, you know. I don't know. And so he brings me down here. And right when I walked in, now I have a degree in violin as well as Christian studies. So I know theaters. I know how much things are usually worth. And when I walked in, I was like, underneath my breath, I was like, we cannot afford this. We cannot afford this. I knew what it was worth in the suburbs, and then I knew to triple it for downtown. Okay, that's just the way things work. If you live downtown, you know this, all right? And so we walked out, we walked back up to the booth, and he said, so what do you think? I said, man, you got a world-class theater. I mean, that is an amazing place. We cannot afford it. And he goes, well, what can you do? I said, I don't know. I'll get back with you and everything else. And so then he said, well, tell me this. What do you kind of do with your messages? What do you kind of do with those? I'm sitting there thinking, what is he asking? I don't know what he's wanting. I was like, well, I mean, we talk about the Bible and we, you know, talking about God and Jesus. You know, I can't figure out really what he's wanting. And he says to me, well, what illustrations, what kind of things do you use? And I said, well, I use a lot of personal stories because, you know, Jesus used a lot of stories, so maybe he knew something, you know. And I said, I try to do a lot of that. I try to, you know, relate to the culture and try to show, you know, the Bible, while it was, you know, written a long time ago, is still incredibly relevant today. And this is how God works in our lives. And he goes, well, I just need to know, do you use fire? And I said, fire? And his catering manager, Megan, she'll tell you the absolute truth. She looked at him and she goes, Nick Costas. And she goes, whack, hits him on the side of the arm. And she goes, what has gotten into you today? And he goes, I just know comics. And comics come in and do outrageous things. And then I look at him and say, why did you do that? And they go, you didn't ask. He said, so I'm asking. This is from experience. I said, well, I don't use fire. I mean, I could if you need me to, but I'm not quite sure the application for this. And so now then when I see him occasionally every couple of months, I'll look at him and say, hey, Nick, this Sunday, I want you to be in attendance because I'm not only bringing out fire, we're going to do like chicken's heads and sacrifices and all that sort of stuff that we've always wanted to do. And he'll just laugh, you know, with me and everything. And so we had a good time. So ever since then, I'll just look at him and go, we're bringing out fire next Sunday, man. Huge, you know, huge pyrotechnics in the whole works. And he'll just laugh. But God gave us a man in Nick that saw the value of us. And I will tell you, Nick is one of our most ardent supporters. He will tell people in his restaurant, have you checked out the church that is here on Sundays? they're doing a good work in the city. Nick is also going to bat for us. He told me, you know, have you been able to find a space? And I told him, you know, well, we're trying to work out all those things, but we're trying to raise funds first. But, you know, anything we can do to kind of get moving would be great. And he said, I know some guys. I'll make a phone call for you. You know, as you look back, what it was God doing. Because, see, in my prayer time, and I've still got it in my journal entry, I prayed that our landlord would not only appreciate us, but would like us and would work for our benefit. It's an answer to prayer, huge answer to prayer. On February the 19th, I had been struggling with, okay, what's the next thing for our church? This was this year, struggling, you know, what do I do? And I called Guy Stevens, our church launching director, and I said, hey man, I'm stuck. I said, you're here to get me unstuck. That's your job. So get me unstuck. And so we met at Caribou Coffee. And he goes, well, where are you on the coffee house thing? I was like, looked around the church, got incredible people. They can tell you everything operationally what to do. They can tell you computer systems, web design, graphics. I said, we would look amazing, but we have no one to run this. I said, we know good food. We can tell you what's good and bad, but we have no one to run this. And he said, I just met a guy yesterday. His name's Mickey D'Angelo. He's come to Christ, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, I believe, something like that. And he was like, he was in the restaurant industry, now then feels called into some pastoral ministry, but at the same time, he still has a heart for the restaurant industry, but he doesn't really want to be a full-time pastor, but he still feels called to pastor people and love people, but he doesn't want to, you know, he's like, he's trying to figure out how to fuse them together. I was like, huh. He's like, do you want to talk to him? And I said, yeah. So that evening I called Mickey. Mickey's sitting right back here this morning. And for about an hour, Mickey had no idea why I called. I called him. I said, hey, my name's Alex. I'm this pastor at Gateway Church. Just calling you up. Just see what's going on and everything else. For an hour, he will tell you this absolute truth. I didn't say anything about a restaurant. I didn't say, because I wanted to figure out if I even liked the guy or not, you know? I mean, I didn't want to, you know, just come out and say, hey, that's what we're going to do, and then find out later on, we do not want to partner with this guy at all. After about an hour, I realized, hey, this is a huge potential. And then I told him, and he goes, oh, that's what this is about. And he had just spoken to Guy like the day previous, Guy Stevens. He had just spoken to him the day previous. And God began to put that together, and suddenly here we are today, and we're pushing towards that mission that we really feel like God's given to us. On March the 8th, I'd been having a lot of trouble with my back. I'd had some back conditions way years ago and met a guy in Arkansas that's world-renowned as a physical therapist. Didn't know it at the time, but do now. And so I called him up and I said, oh, Rob, I wish you lived up here, man. I said, this church planting thing's killing me. I was like, it's killing my back. And he goes, well, man, my best friend's over there in Beechwood. Go see him. I was like, you're kidding. He goes, no, he's over there. So I call up, and they were like, no, he's not seeing patients right now. I was like, you don't understand. I know his best friend, you know? I mean, this is like an automatic end. They were like, he's not seeing patients. I said, would you talk to him and tell him that Rob Tillman said this is who I need to see? They came back on and said, he's not seeing new patients. Man, I was so frustrated. I was like, I know his best friend. How come he won't see me? And they said, there's this other lady that he's been training, and she knows a lot. And I'm like, no, but he's not the same. But I was hurting, so I went, you know. And after a few weeks, I call Rob back, and I was like, hey, man, this girl's pretty good. And he's like, well, that's because I trained her. I was like, really? And he goes, yeah. Well, Rob knew that Sherry and I had been struggling because we'd been trying to get pregnant for a long time and been told that this may never happen. And he said, just tell her your story. I was like, wait a second. I'm just going to walk in. And as she's like, you know, trying to get me back in place, I'm just going to say, hey, tell you, we might not have a kid. You know, I mean, that's kind of awkward conversation, you know. And he said, just tell her your story. And I remember laying there, you know, face down. And she's just, you know, saying, man, your back's all messed up. I was like, I know. And I finally just said, I don't know why I'm telling you this. You have to always do that, right? You can't just jump in. And so I said, hey, here's the deal. Here's what's kind of going on and everything else. And it just went totally quiet. And I'm like, crickets. You know, nothing's happening. That was awkward. Thanks, Rob, for setting me up for nothing, you know. And I finally, you know, your head's face down. If you've ever been in one of these offices before, you know, your head's face down. One of these, if you've ever been to the chiropractor, same type of deal. And she's not doing anything. And I'm like, okay, this is an awkward, awkward moment. Okay, with one of my friends, it wouldn't be. But I don't really know this person. So I look up and there's a tear coming down. And I'm like, now it's more awkward, okay, you know, because it's like, thanks, Rob. Now I have a person crying. You know, that was not the goal here. And so I said, I am so sorry. And she said, no, I've just been going through a lot lately. And we began to talk and everything else. And I said, well, can I ask what's going on? And if not, that's okay. And she goes, no, it's okay. And she said, back in November, she said, I lost the person that I was going to marry. I was like, ooh, now it's tough, man. I was like, wow, I'm sorry. And now, you know, Rob knew enough about me to know that this is why he wanted this to come up, because he cared about her. And we'll just call her Shauna. And I said, well, Shauna, I said, you know, I'm sorry for that pain, and I hope that I didn't. And she goes, no, this is good. And she knew I was a pastor, and we began to talk and everything else. And so then I called Rob when I got home, and I said, wow, Rob, tough situation. He said, yep. Yep. He said, just keep talking to her. And so then I was talking to her. I started piecing some things together in our conversations. And so as I went back one time, I looked at her and I said, Shauna, I want to know one thing. Is your fiance, or, you know, your fiance that passed on, was he fairly well known? She said, you could say that. I said, was your fiance-to-be Gerald Levert? She said, yeah. I just put my arm around her, kind of teared up a little bit. I said, I'm so sorry. She said, why would God take him over cold medication? He didn't do anything wrong. What would you say in that moment? There's not a whole lot to say. I said, I don't know, but I'm here for you. One of the first things we did is Gateway. We sent that girl some flowers, paid this for this huge bouquet, and said, hey, we're praying for you. She called me up with tears, and she goes, this is one of the nicest things. One of the nicest things, because she said it was just so unexpected. And so we began to talk about what does she do next. And I said, see, that's the thing. I don't know what to tell you about the whole loss, but what I can say to you is this. I want to help you find your way forward, because I can't answer that. Nobody can. But I want to help you find your way forward. And she said, the toughest thing that I have in my mind is I've got all these pictures up and everything else. And she said, when I do find somebody else, is that going to be threatening? Is that going to scare them away? And we began to talk about all these things. And I said, you know something? God's going to send you the person that will value that. I said, and I would encourage you at some point in time, you probably need to make sure that the new guy has as many pictures as Gerald did. We laughed about that a little bit. And I said, but I think you're going to find a guy that's going to appreciate that. I really do. I don't think he's going to feel threatened by that at all. And I looked at her and I said, you know, I said, I will tell you this. I don't know why God had my back hurt, but if it was to send me here for this moment that I would need to go through pain to help you with a greater pain that you have in your life, then so be it. I will tell you, in my journey, God sent me some pain to help. God's going to send you some pain to help. And when I looked at Cleveland, downtown Cleveland, and everybody said, why would you go there? Why would you do that? It's one of the fastest dying cities and blah, blah, blah. Because I really don't think that's the way that God looks at it. Because here's what I know that is an absolutely biblical principle, and Jesus taught about it many times. Out of death always comes life. And I believe that that's the way God sees Cleveland. And do I see all the negativity? Sure, I do. But I don't want to become cynical, because that's not a God-like feature. But I believe that God is positioning a place like Cleveland for such a time as this to do a miraculous turnaround. And I'm not just talking about economic, but I'm talking about a spiritual awakening, because where does God always choose? And who does God always choose? Least likely. And I really believe that God, through Gateway, through other churches in the Cleveland area, and as we continue to help plant churches all over Cleveland, that God is going to transform. We may not see it tomorrow. We may not see it next year. It may take 10 years. But I am firmly convinced that God is going to do something amazing out of Cleveland. And that is why I'm here. Because the point really is this, that even though I've told you a lot of my personal stories, it's really not a narrative about me. It's a narrative of what God did in my life. And you know something? You're a part of that narrative. You're a part of that story. Gateway was started by 13 people that came alongside and said, "What if?" You know, in March of 2007, that's all we had. We launched April 1, 2007, and that's all we had. We were like, whoa, this may not go anywhere. But you know, as you look back, what happens is this, and I learned this from a farmer, okay? I am from Arkansas, so I know some of these things, all right? A lot of times people go, how come that farmer, when he's on his tractor, looks back? Now, certainly he's making sure that things are cutting and planting and all those other things, but let me tell you what he's really doing. Now then, some of them have GPS systems now, so this is kind of irrelevant for those, but that's very few and far between. What the farmer is literally doing is this. He's checking out his point back there with a point over there, and that's what keeps him straight. And that's what he's doing. And when we talk about our Ebenezer in our life, it's to check out that point back there to see what God was doing. God's always helped us, so we know that God is true. And that's how we gain our direction. And I just want to challenge you and encourage you this morning. I don't know if any of that part of that story helped you, or you're like, I don't understand the relevance of this. But I do want you to understand that there's one thing in that scripture passage that you cannot take out of it, or else it all falls apart for you personally, and I really believe this is why it's fallen apart for Cleveland. God said at the beginning of the chapter and at the end of the chapter, don't forget to obey me. You know what the Christian life's really all about, and we really don't like talking about this word? It's the word obedience. It's not a fun word. It's a tough word. We don't like that. Americans have an independent spirit, especially in the Rust Belt now, got a pretty independent spirit. But you know something? God does want to do something great, but he does it through obedience. Let's everyone bow our heads and close our eyes this morning. A lot of the stories certainly that I told this morning were my journey with God. Some of you are beginning your journey or trying to figure out what God's doing in your life. And maybe you need to do a little bit of looking back to see when God did something in your life. And you look back and you say, you know, I don't know what it was, but there was something back there guiding me. And earlier we prayed a prayer where we just simply said, God, speak to me personally this morning. And here's what I want you to look back to and remember, that when you prayed that prayer, maybe for some of you it was a cynical thing of, well, I don't know, I'll give this one last shot. For some of you it was a desperation thing, and for some of you it was a joyful thing to say, God, continue what you've been doing in my life. But if you really meant that prayer, then what I firmly believe this morning is God's given you something, and I think you realize it. And for each one of you, it's probably going to be something very different. It may have not even been anything to do with one of the stories I told. It was just something that God impressed upon your heart. And I think you found out that God answered your prayer. And so is God real? Yes. Is God personal? Which is a better question. And does God care? Even a better question. The answer to that is yes.